Well, hey there, and welcome back to the Driven Woman Entrepreneur Podcast. This is your host, Diane Wingert, and today we're going to talk about crafting a business that is as unique and memorable as you are. My special guest today is Stephanie Scheller. She is an entrepreneur with ADHD. She's a violinist. She loves creating live events, and she helps other entrepreneurs with ADHD step outside the marketing box and claim all of their brilliance. She's going to demonstrate exactly how she does that during this interview, and we are going to talk about all the conventional wisdom that she has chosen to say no thank you to. Later on in the episode, you are also going to be one of the very first people to hear a snippet of Stephanie's new song. It's called Fly, and it is about entrepreneurs just like us. It's going to be released to the public in just a few days on Stephanie's YouTube channel. So we are the very first to hear this snippet, and I couldn't be more excited. Let's get right to the interview, and don't forget to wait for that song. So Stephanie, this is a conversation I have really been anticipating for so many reasons that are about to become really obvious to our listeners. But you are a marketing strategy trainer for small businesses. You do live events. You are also a violinist. And one of the things I think you do exceptionally well is you've crafted a business that is uniquely reflective of your gifts, your talents, your interests, your passions, and your ADHD. So tell us a little bit about Grow Disrupt and how it came to be. And I think I can figure out why you called it that, but why don't you tell me anyway?
Well, first of all, I'm just going to have you follow me around as my personal hype woman, as you were talking about how you want to set this up before we turned on the recording here. I was like, oh my gosh, like she's making me feel really good about myself. Everyone needs a Diane in their life, I think.
You're welcome.
So a little about Grow Disrupt. So Grow Disrupt is technically my second company, but the primary company that I run, it's Grow Disrupt is an educational experience designer for ADHD entrepreneurs. And so whenever I say that, I always get like, wait, what? Looks?
It's a mouthful.
It's a mouthful. We design and produce business growth events. These are around how to grow your business. So we bring in speakers to talk about marketing, sales, operations, leadership that are coming in that our requirement is these are probably not the speakers you're going to see on most like major stages around. We bring in some of those speakers too, but our goal is to find the speakers who have actually done what they're telling you to do recently and more than once. I don't want someone who got lucky. I don't want someone who had something that worked back in the 90s. Like that was 30 years ago at this point. I need stuff that works today and that we know it has a proven track record, not just, hey, I got lucky. So we bring in these speakers, but then the way we put the event together, from how the agenda is put together, the venues, the way the venue is set up, the stuff. So to give people an idea, we select all of our venues. They all have to have a garden attached to them, because when people go out into a garden, especially people with ADHD, it actually resets the learning portions of the brain. So we then push people to go out into the gardens on the breaks because it really forces them to reset. And what that means is we also might have to have enough bathrooms for everyone to get through the bathrooms in the first 10 minutes of the 30-minute break. So like we really dig into like what needs to go into the venue. We have gotten into custom scents and custom music and custom coffee blends and custom tea blends and like all these things to understand the neuroscience of how the ADHD brain functions. And how do I create an event where you're not walking out with one or two things that you've learned? You're actually learning things throughout the full 2 days and implementing those in your business when you get back to your business without having to buy another, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 in coaching or consulting.
I definitely have to find my way to one of these events.
I love you.
Because everything that you're saying, it's uniquely crafted and curated with the deep appreciation and understanding that people with ADHD perceive and interact with their environment differently. So you've done the environmental engineering that makes the events hospitable for their brains and supportive of their unique neurobiology. I imagine that you attract really interesting, fun, creative people who probably do a lot of talking in between. I'm wondering how hard it is to get them back in their seats after that 30-minute break, because we don't all respect time limits as well as we should.
Right. Once upon a time, it was. We have learned a lot of really good tricks for getting people back in their seats and getting them motivated. And we still have to like employ all of these like these little like, you know, nudges. And I work with my MC leading up to the event to talk about like, here's how you're going to plant psychological nudges to pull them back into their chairs at the right time. And even with all of that, we do still have to like, you know, have someone going around and being like, hey, heads up, we're restarting. But we don't have nearly the trouble we had, you know, even 3 years ago before we started using this. You know, for every problem there is that I encountered in these events, every time something happens at an event that I'm like, I didn't love that, then I start looking into, okay, so from a neuroscience perspective, how do I make sure that doesn't happen again? Like, we started digging into the neuroscience of this because I would have, you know, people who would leave early. Last day of the event, a lot of people like to leave early. They're trying to get to dinner or whatever. So I started looking at, okay, what do we need to do for the closing of the event to make sure everyone stays through the end of the event? And we looked at it from a whole bunch of perspectives, and we put four or five things in place to make sure everyone wants to stay through the closing of the event, right? So every time we found something we didn't love, we were like, all right, so what are we going to do to make sure it doesn't happen again? And that includes getting people back in their seats after the breaks.
See, you are embodying two of the things that I think everyone with ADHD has very naturally, but they don't always know how to leverage. And that is creativity and curiosity. Like, I just spoke at a summit on the subject of rejection sensitivity. And because, like you, I work with entrepreneurs with ADHD, a lot of them really struggle with negative self-talk and with the difficulty of putting themselves out there, in so many words, marketing, asking for the business, even showing up on social media, because they anticipate the possibility of rejection and because that can be such a powerful negative experience. But if you use your curiosity and say, okay, that didn't work, that felt crappy, right, I don't want to repeat that, I wonder what I would need to change to have a different experience, then you're leveraging a gift instead of being shut down by what didn't work. Have you always been this way?
No. In fact, there was a period when we started. So we started doing these events. 2017 was the first year we did a multi-speaker event designed for business growth purposes. And in 2017 and even 2018, things happened at those events that my reaction at the time was, well, here's why I'm never going to let those people back in the room again, because they are the ones who caused the problem. And it wasn't until 2019 that I started to really, after the 2019 Grow Retreat and leading up to the 2019 Grow Retreat, that I started shifting how I was looking at it from, they weren't the right guests, that was their fault they did this, to, okay, well, what could I do to make it so that they don't want that to happen again, right? You know, for example, our speakers have to hang out on site for two full days, right? And a lot of times when I'm talking, especially to some big name speakers, they don't love the idea of like, yeah, no, you have to be on site. You cannot fly in and fly out. You're on site for 2 days. And they're like, I don't want to sit in the audience. And so I sat there and I was like, okay, so how do I change this? How do I make this, instead of being like, well, if the speaker doesn't want to, I'm not hiring them, how do I make this something where even the big name speakers are like, okay, yeah, I'll do that. Yeah, actually, that kind of sounds interesting. Yeah, let's go with that, right? But it took, I mean, I would say that was easily 2019 before I started having that mental shift, really, really started looking for those changes all over the place.
I think I understand, Stephanie, why you call the business Grow Disrupt, because that thinking right there is disruptive. Instead of just accepting a big name speaker's like, no, I don't do that, I'm the talent, I show up at the last possible moment and I bounce as soon as my part is over while people are still like loving me. And you're like, no, that's not how we do things around here. And then ask yourself, how could I make this so enticing that even someone who's a BFD wants to be a part of it. Like, what is the magic about these events that you knew you needed everybody to have an immersion experience to get everything they could possibly have come for?
What is the magic about these events? Wow, that's a big question. There's a couple of things. My original goal was that I wanted to create an event where the event was the product. Because so many times you go to events and they want you to buy $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 worth of coaching at the back of the room on the way out of the event. And a lot of them are actually built to push that stuff.
Yes.
They are actually, there's a lot of things that they do, from how the room is set up to how the event is run to who's on stage. There's a lot of stuff they do that actually I think gets almost into the slimy manipulative range in order to push people to make sure they're buying stuff at the back of the room before they leave. And so my original goal was, I want to create an event that is the anti, I want to create an event where the event is the product, where they get their content. And we did that in 2020. We had two people who sat in the room at the 2020 Grow Retreat. In 2019, they had both done respectively about $270,000 in revenue and $325,000 in revenue. So not big businesses, barely big enough to really, you know, be able to come to the event. And in 2020, one of them did 960. So the guy who did $330,000 or $370,000 did $960,000 in 2020. And the lady who did $275,000 did $2.2 million. And when I talked to them about it, they were like, oh yeah, well, this and this and this that I learned at the event, we implemented those. And I was like, oh, whoa. So that we hit that. But then something happened at the 2021 event that kind of shifted and gave me a new perspective on what exactly the magic was that has really shifted what our pursuit is. And we still have those success stories where people come and they go, you know, people went from, you know, 2 million to 5 million, like real, real growth, right? But at the end of the 2021 event, I'd just gotten back to my hotel room. It was late. I'd taken the whole team out for dinner to celebrate the event being over, you know, doing well. I climbed into bed and my phone lit up right next to me, and as a text message from one of the guests. And I open it and the first thing is, Steph, got some feedback for you. And I'm like, feedback that couldn't wait till tomorrow that you have to send me right now. Okay. All right. So I'm reading it and the text message is not getting much better as I'm reading. It's like every year I walk into your event absolutely doubting how much I spend. You hold this event at the time of year I am the brokest, and it always seems to be the time of year that I'm having the hardest time as it is. And every single year my doubts are wiped out. I walk in feeling like a failure and I walk out feeling like I'm a real possibility again. And I just started crying and I was like, that's what we do. Small business owners deal with so much stuff day to day. We create space for them to reconnect with their magic so they can grow the business. And that is the magic at our events.
Girl, you are such a good storyteller. You had me hooked and reeled in. I'm thinking, oh my God, this guy is going to rip her a new one just as she's trying to go to sleep. And she didn't get any sleep that night. And she showed up all raggedy the next day. You know exactly what you're doing there. You just brought me right along. And then all of a sudden it's like, ba-bam. But surprise and delight, I honestly think if you are the more extroverted type of ADHD entrepreneur, the opportunity to tell stories, to make magic with people, to help facilitate their growth, and to have fun in the process, to me, like, that doesn't feel like work. That is never going to feel like work. And you even bring original music into the deal. Can we talk about that for a second?
Now I know I never lost, gave it up, no. Worth the cost, rising up, so watch me rise across the sky and see my spark.
Yes, it's really hilarious, especially with the song that we're producing and we are releasing here. my co-writer and I, Susanna, who is also my technology director, also my my sister, and I admit that now. I didn't used to admit it because people used to think it was like a nepotism thing, but she's just actually really good at what she does. I'm actually really hard to work for. She is phenomenal. But we write this song together, right? I wrote out a bunch of the lyrics. And I wrote down a lot of these lyrics were from conversations I've had with small business owners over the past 5 years. Like, I've had multiple people be like, when I will mention some of the lyrics, they're like, wait, how did you know that I went through that? I'm like, well, you and like 18 other people at least. But so we write the song together. Susanna does all the composition because she's brilliant at that. We go into the studio, we record it. We're getting the song produced, right, to release this Friday from when people are hearing this. And Susanna and I both looked at each other at one point. And we were like, this is literally like a dream come true moment for us. Like, both of us had dreams as kids of being in the studio, recording music, releasing it, being a pop star. And I don't know if we're going to be the star part, but it's a pop song about the, it's a dream come true. It's so cool. And I'm just laughing because I'm like, this is why I had to start a small business. Like, what other business do you get to go write and produce a pop song while running a business that doesn't do that for a business? I'm having a blast.
But see, this is the point I really want to hammer down, because you not only took advantage of the opportunity to become an entrepreneur, you also took advantage of the opportunity to create a business that was uniquely yours. And something we talked about previously was the messaging and the advice that so many of us get, which is, if you want to be found, if you want to be hired, if you want to have a successful, sustainable business, you need to niche down, you need to get super focused, you need to be known for one thing, you need to talk about that thing ad nauseum, because otherwise you're going to be a droplet in the ocean and you're going to go broke and out of business. Disrupted that message and took things in a totally different direction. So I want you to tell me why you don't think we need to niche and what we can do instead, because you've done it and clearly it's working.
It's working. You know, I had someone tell me the other day, they said, if you want to double your income, you need to niche down. I said, yeah, but zero times two is still zero. We try and niche down so hard. And I did this early in the business when the business was so new. And of course, everyone's telling me, hey, if you want to double your business, you got to niche down. If you want to grow, you got to niche down. I spent so much time trying to figure out what my niche was supposed to be, and then only chasing that niche, only to finally land one of those clients, only to realize I didn't actually want to work with that niche.
Yikes.
And then chasing another one, only to find out, yeah, I didn't want to work with that niche either. And so, like, I spent so much time creating a niche, going after it, realizing I didn't want to, creating a new niche, zagging, going after that one. And the thing is this, the reason most people say we need niches, I love digging into psychology. Clearly, neuroscience and psychology, like, these are my jam.
Same.
I love digging into this. And I want to understand, whenever someone says, this is why you have to do X, I want to know why, right? So the reason people say you need a niche is because they want you to be memorable. They want to be able to not be like, oh, I'm a business coach to anyone and everyone, because that is not memorable. No one's going to remember you as the person to refer. But if you have something that makes you memorable, then you don't necessarily need the niche. And think about the really big players in the, at least the personal growth world. Most of them don't really have niches. They provide a variety. Like, they have a little bit of a target market, but they talk to a lot of people. You need what a friend of mine, Jesse Cole, has coined your yellow tux.
Oh, I know who Jesse Cole is.
Yes, right? He is, dude, the guy is brilliant.
But yellow is not my color, so maybe orange. Maybe I'll get a custom orange suit and I'll start rocking that, you know? But he's genius when it came to branding himself. Like, yep. Hardcore.
Brilliant. And you know what I've learned watching Jesse and reading his books is, yes, so everyone needs a yellow tux, but it doesn't all need to be a yellow tux. First of all, because if everyone started wearing a yellow tux, then Jesse would just go wear a green tux. Like, he would just, because you're not standing out at that point. What everyone needs is something that other people can grasp and hold onto that is unique to them. And the violin and music became that for me. And I'm able to tie that to, especially in the marketing strategy training, when I'm working with people to teach them, how do you become a strategist for your marketing so that you can actually manage your marketing instead of being managed by your marketing. It all ties, a lot of it ties into creativity, which it relates to the violin, right? The violin is very creative. It's a very creative endeavor. And so being able to be the violin marketing lady or the violin speaker lady or the violin lady, like those are all, I mean, it's a very physical, tangible thing. I have so much violin stuff at this point, and I carry the violins with me almost everywhere. I bought this violin behind me just because it was practically indestructible and I could take it everywhere. But you need something that is your standout, your violin, your yellow tuxedo.
Oh, I love that so much. And it was exactly the first thing that I noticed when I went to your website. I already, you know, we had been introduced by a mutual. I knew of you. Yep. I knew that you worked with ADHD Entrepreneur, so I knew I was interested in getting to know you. But then I saw the violin and I'm like, oh, wait, what? Am I in the right place? And sometimes it's the pattern interrupt of not being exactly what they expect that makes people curious enough to want to know more. And once they dig just a little, they only have to read maybe a paragraph on your website to realize, oh, this is different. And even without saying it, but you also do say it, you're inviting people to actually be all of who they are, stand out, be visible, show what makes you different, because what makes you different makes you memorable. It doesn't have to be harder than that. And you don't have to niche down.
No. And you know, when we start doing our standout, there's two sides of this, I will say, right? So when you pick your standout thing, you will have people who will decide they're not going to work with you at that point because they, whatever reason, they don't like your yellow tuxedo, your orange suit. They don't like your violins, whatever. But the good news is, as long as you're pretty public about that being your thing, you're probably not going to hear from those people because they'll just like go away. The other thing to keep in mind is that you get someone who's maybe not the perfect ideal client. You don't have to be like, oh no, I don't work with people like you. You know, if they're a terrible person who wants to launder money, maybe you don't work with them. But like, if for the most part, when you get a client, you can work with that client. You can use this thing to stand out, to be, this is what makes the world so beautiful, is when we all lean into that thing that makes us unique, when we're not all trying to do the same thing, when we're letting ourselves be who we are.
And you're a little bit of a rebel. And you are absolutely a disruptor, because one of the things that I think is really interesting about how you work is you could call yourself a marketing strategist and you know a lot about marketing strategy, but what's in alignment with your values, what's in alignment with your perspective in the world is that you don't actually want to do marketing strategy for other people, because then it would be based on your gifts and your talents and your perspective. You teach people how to become their own marketing strategist by leveraging their unique and memorable gifts. Is that difficult for most entrepreneurs with ADHD to figure out? Like, I work with people on figuring out their zone of genius so that they can build their business around it. But a lot of people I experience don't either think they have a zone of genius or they really struggle to figure out what it is. Do you find that as well?
I do. And well, yes and no. Yes. We'll say yes. We'll go with yes. I do find that. I think that comes down to a couple of pieces. One is when people are trying to be all of the things. So when I first started learning, I carry a certification in DISC and driving forces and emotional quotient and acumen and a handful of other things, not because I do necessarily training on those things anymore, except for my own team, but because by carrying the certification, I have to renew it every 2 years, which means I have to go through the training, which means it has to stay fresh in my mind. And the reason that I bring that up is because when I started learning these, my scores were much more on the assessment, were much more towards the middle of the graph. Like, I definitely had some preferences in a couple directions, but you could see where I was kind of trying to pull myself to neutral so that I could be, there's strengths and weaknesses to being a high D, there's strengths and weaknesses to being a low D, there's strengths and weaknesses to being a high A, all the way across the board. And I was trying to to have the strengths and the strengths of the high C and the strengths of the low C, the strengths of the high S and the strengths of the low S and the high, right? I was trying to have all of it. And I've realized I don't think there is such a thing as a well-rounded individual.
Thank you.
I
think that's such an important point.
Right? Because when we try and be everything,
I think we minimize what's best about us to try to be well-rounded. It's like, don't try.
Yeah.
Be imbalanced.
Right. And hire people who are really good at the things you're not good at, and then train yourself to be able to communicate through those differences. Like, that's the key. Because if I hire someone who's really, really structured and organized, and I have learned I am not the most structured or organized person in the world.
Frankly, like, I'm shocked. Not really.
There's certain things I am organized with, but like, I have an organizer come to my house once a year and just kind of reset the house because it just kind of falls into chaos throughout the year.
Sure.
But I would rather do that than fight with myself all year long to try and be organized, right? But back on track. So if I hire someone who's super structured, or they want an SOP for everything, I'm not going to write an SOP for every single thing we're going to do. But if I don't communicate that with them and have them communicate back with me, we're going to drive each other nuts to the point where we're going to quit working together. So I can hire, you know, I've got a member of my team who loves writing SOPs to the point where now I record a quick video and I'm like, hey, turn this into an SOP, send it to me, I'll edit it. That's so much more in my zone of genius. Mm. And then I get to move on, but that communication piece has to be there. And I have to be willing to lean in and know these are my strengths. These are my weaknesses. Watch for when my strengths, because any strength in excess becomes a weakness. You can be really direct until you become a bully. You know, directness is good until it's not. So I watch for my strengths. I watch for my weaknesses. I don't try and shore up my weaknesses. I hire my weaknesses, but I do shore up my communication.
Hire your weaknesses is a mic drop moment. But I think for people, and I think for the majority of us, and I think especially for people who have been culturally conditioned as female, this notion that we need to be all the things. We need to be competent in all the things. And frankly, small business ownership does require you to at least be responsible for lots and lots of things that you couldn't possibly be skilled in, at least until you're making enough money and profitable enough that you can hire people to take over those functions. But you know what I'm wondering about? I know that you were homeschooled, and I'm going to be straight up and say, I wouldn't like publicly disparage it, but I used to think, come on, like, you're really shortchanging your kids, you know, preventing them from having like the wonderful public school experience that we've all experienced. But truly now that I fully understand and embrace my own ADHD, now that I really see how it presents in each of my children, I think you had a distinct advantage not being conditioned to the norms that are necessary in public school.
Yeah.
Because kids who are different, kids who think differently, kids who perceive differently, kids who express themselves differently, kids who problem solve differently, people like us, generally got a lot of negative feedback because they weren't doing what the teachers thought they should do. And that creates a lot of harm and a lot of negative self-talk, a lot of masking. And even though they may decide to become entrepreneurs because they want to do things their own way, they're up against a lot of mental chatter that holds them back because of those early experiences. It really makes me think you probably had an advantage because you didn't have the imposition of that level of rigid conformity to the norm to hold you back from your own creative process.
I do think I had a huge advantage there. One of the things, I was a very challenging child to homeschool. And to your point, I think there's ways you can do homeschool that are not supporting and helping your kids. And then there are ways that you can do homeschool that can actually, I think, be better than going to the public school. Now, of course, I'm speaking from a very biased perspective because I never spent a day in public school in my life. So it was hard for me to speak from a point of expertise on that. But being homeschooled gave me a lot of opportunities to learn my own learning style, to learn a lot of self-awareness. You know, because I was so challenging to teach in junior high, my mom just started giving me both the textbooks and the teacher's manuals and just telling me, just tell me what your grade is at the end of the year. I'm not doing this with you anymore. And I was like, oh, great. Wow. And at that point in time, she was like, you always know better. You always know it better. You do it. And it was maybe not something I would generally condone, but it worked out really well for me because I do have a strong sense of morals, right and wrong and all stuff. So I didn't go look at the answers because I wanted, but having that one, having like the safety net of knowing that I could look at the answers took the strain and the stress out of mm-hmm. having to learn. And two, I was able to restructure my year so that I was able to do, you know, I would do an entire year's worth. Like I would blitz through my literature and anything reading and writing related. I would do it within the first few weeks of the school year. I would finish those. I wouldn't turn them into mom because if I did that, she would give me more and that would have been crazy. But I would finish those and then I would stall on the sciences and the maths until like the last month, 2 months of the year. But that gave me the opportunity to understand my learning style, to have to become very self-managed. I still had to get stuff done on time. I still had to turn in my stuff by the end of the year, but I really got to be very much in control of how I went about getting to the end goal. And so I think it became a great tool for me in most things in life. I think it served me very well when I got to college. It served me very well when I got into, you know, my corporate job. And I think that same skill set has continued to serve me really well in business as well.
Well, you're speaking to something that I have seen again and again and again with clients who are entrepreneurs with ADHD, is that most of them were not homeschooled. And most of them decided to start their own business either because they felt too controlled by corporate, mm-hmm. academic, nonprofit life. It was just, they weren't allowed to be creative. They weren't allowed to do things their way. It just was like, this is not for me. I'm out of here. Or they just quit things as soon as they felt uncomfortable. I'm like, well, this isn't it. Right. I'm going to go to something else. And then after you've quit a bunch of things, nobody wants to hire you. And then you have to start your own business anyway. But one of the things that they tell me again and again and again is that they don't know how to manage their own time, energy, effort, focus, motivation, because as much as they hated the structure in the workplace, man, did they become dependent on it. And now they're a brand new entrepreneur. They're like, great, I don't have to have a boss anymore. Now I'm my own boss, but they don't know how to be the boss of themselves. And they're truly floundering.
And I think we course correct, we overcorrect sometimes. I did this as well, where then I became, I tell everyone, I'm like, I am the worst boss I've ever had. There was a period of like a year and a half, I was the worst boss I've ever had. I was the worst boss to Susanna for a long time too. She's been with me the longest. And there was a long time when I was not a good boss to her. So I think we don't have any structure, or we tend to try and push ourselves too far. And then anytime we mess up, anytime we don't toe the line, anytime we are right there to beat ourselves up, and we're worse than any micromanaging boss because we're there for every single little tiny screw up.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's like, just, you're very right to call it a course correction and an overcompensation. Yeah. And I see far too many people who are completely convinced that the only way they can get anything done is to bully themselves. Like, okay, what if that's not the only way? What if there were a better way? You know, because that certainly is never going to get the best out of you. You know, one of the things we were talking about before we started recording is this whole notion that has become wildly popular, that ADHD is a superpower. This is controversial because there are people who have lived experience of the opposite, that ADHD, in their opinion, has pretty much ruined their life and prevented them from being successful, while other people are saying, as far as I'm concerned, it's a superpower. Now, I happen to be right down the middle. I believe that ADHD is responsible for some of my greatest gifts and strengths, but it's also responsible for some of the things that I struggle with most profoundly and always mm-hmm. have. So I think it's both. Now, to be able to spend more time doing the things I'm really good at requires that I know what I'm not good at and willingness to take responsibility for managing those things. Sure. Where do you land on the ADHD superpower thing? Because clearly you figured out a way to recognize what your superpowers are and how to leverage them. But I don't know, just tell me your thoughts on that.
Yes. So I want to bring us full circle to something I said earlier. Any strength in excess is a weakness. And that is how I think ADHD is a strength. I think it is a superpower. However, left unchecked, there are pieces of it that cause problems.
For example,
my creativity. And I am an incredibly creative individual. I love doing creative stuff. I love playing on the violin. I love coming up with fun, crazy, wild, outlandish marketing ideas, things we can do to promote the business. I love this creative side. I can spiral down that and be so creative that one, we come up with stuff that's not possible to be done. And two, we never actually get anything done. Just shooting straight. I picked up the violin to play through the song Fly yesterday afternoon I was just going to play through it twice. And about 20 minutes later, all of a sudden I was like, oh, what just happened? When we're getting ready for a performance, I will play the song throughout the day to make sure that I'm ready to perform it. Right. So I was like, practice, just grabbed it. And I have to set timers for myself because I will spiral down into that. But at the same time, that creativity is how we come up with stuff like producing a full, 3-minute, 48-second pop song about what it's like to be an entrepreneur. That creativity is how we came up with, let's go get a custom coffee blend created. Like that creativity is how we came up with, let's get a custom scent created. So it's a huge strength. It's an asset. It's a resource, but it has to be managed and tempered. Just like Superman, right? Super strength guy over there. If he doesn't watch and control his strength, he can crush you. And that is ADHD. It is a strength, but I think ADHD individuals above and beyond most others, I'd mentioned earlier, I said, right, there's two reasons I think people have trouble. And the other reason I think people have trouble is ADHD people aren't super self-aware. It's a hard skill to develop. And it is critically important for people with ADHD. We have to become, we have to do the stuff that other people don't necessarily have to do. We have to do the journaling and have coaches and guides. We have to plug into groups and networks that keep us focused and structured and moving forward and taking action, because it is too easy for us to fall into the traps that our ADHD presents. We need that structure in order to make sure, even if it's self-structure to an extent, to make sure that our ADHD is a strength, is a superpower. Because left to run amok, it's going to run amok.
Yes, and I have plenty of cringeworthy, regrettable life moments to validate that. And I think you're speaking to one of the reasons why one of the concepts that I teach and practice is radical self-acceptance. Because by the time you're an adult with ADHD, you've had many, 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 many negative pieces of feedback about yourself. And a lot of the negative feedback that you've received is directly related to your ADHD traits. I've been called obnoxious, oblivious, flaky, like all the things, crazy. But to be able to learn how to practice radical self-acceptance is not to say, well, hey, I have ADHD, just like deal with it. Mm-hmm. No, that's defensiveness and arrogance.
Right.
I'm talking about being willing to study yourself, being curious enough, like you and I are both curious about psychology, like make yourself a case study so that you don't have to be defensive, so that you don't start to indulge in a lot of your old stories. But you could say, isn't it interesting that when this human is in this environment, she behaves in this way, but when she's in this other environment, her behavior is totally different. What can we come to understand about this? Well, maybe environment is really important for this person. So we need to be thinking about what environments to indulge and what to avoid. But I think you have to get to the point where you're able to make that choice without having it trigger unhealed trauma as a result of ADHD. So I am a big fan of therapists and coaches and personal development work. But you're absolutely right. We cannot leverage our superpowers if we don't understand where we're likely to go off the rails and have a plan in place to prevent that from happening.
Yeah. And when we do, we can create magic. Like we really can. It is, you look through the people who have changed the world, they are heavily weighted in the neurodivergent category. People who think differently, who process the world differently, who are not afraid to challenge the status quo, who are not afraid to stand up and say, this is who I am, this is what I'm doing, this is how we're doing things different than it's been done in the past. Those are the people who make the world a better place. There is, you know, the whole Spider-Man quote, with great power comes great responsibility. It's up to us to realize our potential's literally limitless, but we have to do something with it.
You've rendered me speechless. And since you already know how chatty I am, that is quite a feat. And I think the most powerful thing to do would be to end the interview right here, because that was priceless and such a potent reminder that, it doesn't really matter how gifted you are. It doesn't matter how creative you are. It's what you do with it and what you need to manage so that you can do it. So I know that everyone is going to be so curious about this song. So I'm going to make sure that you not only have the snippet that you've already heard earlier in this episode, but you will be among the first to find out how to listen to the entire song, a beautiful song written by this incredible individual for people just like us, because we need to know we're not alone and that our struggles are felt by many. So I'm going to be talking about this for the rest of the week, and I encourage you to get to know Stephanie, get to know her work, and maybe consider going to one of her events. Thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you for having me on. This was a lot of fun.
Fun's a must, right?
Absolutely. What's the point of life otherwise?
Couldn't agree more. I created a private podcast. It's absolutely free of charge, and you can listen to it in the very same place that you're listening to me now. But it's private. So the way you get access to it is you're going to click on the link in the show notes, you'll enter your email address in the form, and it will be sent to you. There are 10 mini-sodes. Each of them is a backstage pass into an actual coaching conversation that I have with one of my one-on-one coaching clients. Now, you're only going to hear my voice because privacy and confidentiality are important to me, but you're going to hear what the specific challenge or problem my client was facing and the feedback, advice, or mindset shift that I offered them. In the show notes, you're also going to get key points and takeaways because, as you know, if you're simply listening, nothing changes. It's when you apply what you learn that things begin to pop. So I hope you'll sign up for it. I hope you'll binge right through it. And I especially hope you'll let me know what you think. The link is in the show notes. Go grab it.